If you're feeling a little cabin feverish, take a little winter road trip to Ottawa, Illinois, a fun, friendly, charming destination with boutique shops, small-town coffee shops, award-winning locally brewed beer, and all kinds of excellent casual and fine dining. Log on to visitottawail.com today.
Today is Wednesday. It's February 12th, 2025 at 2:39 in the afternoon. Boy, the news has been rolling in all day long. This is John Williams. Thanks for finding the Mincing Rascals. Share us with your friends. Give us a good rating. This is the podcast for people who care about Chicago. You can hear me weekdays on WGN Radio from 10 to 2.
I'm Kate Plies, former Chicago reporter, columnist, now doing a history, Chicago history website on Substack called Roseland Chicago 1972.
I'm Marge Halperin, award-winning journalist turned Democratic analyst, community activist, doing what I can to challenge authority.
I'm Eric Zorn, the authority that Marge wants to challenge. I published
never.
I formerly wrote a column for the Tribune, and I also care about Chicago.
We may be joined by our friend Brandon Pope, who joined me on the radio this week to explain the Super Bowl halftime show to us, by the way, and was delightful in that. It was a fun conversation and a little bit of catching up for some of us middle-aged white folks. I loved the show, thought it looked great. Didn't understand the music or the words, but I'm like, okay, this isn't my halftime show, but a lot of people are digging this, and these are two of the biggest stars in the world. Did you guys feel the same way? Like, not your music, but that doesn't make it wrong?
That was certainly mine. I've come to accept that not everything, every art form is for everybody, and I had the same trouble you did understanding what he was saying.
Kendrick Lamar, yeah.
Yeah, Kendrick Lamar, and it was 13 minutes, and I wasn't trapped. I could have walked out of the room, and I didn't. It's interesting to me how we sort of split into camps of people like, that was brilliant, he's a genius, and people are going like, that was terrible, that was the worst show ever. And I just think, like, you know what? Not every entertainment's for everybody, and a lot of people, like I said, a lot of people dug it, and I'm happy they dug it, and it was 13 minutes.
Yeah, right.
I can live with it.
Worse things have happened to you for 13 minutes than a Super Bowl show you don't like.
Well, it's even that I didn't like it. I mean, like you, I kind of just didn't understand it, but I'm okay with not understanding it. It isn't for me, and that's fine.
Visually, it was fun to look at.
I was entertained by it. It wasn't all, a lot of it went over my head, which was fine. It wasn't the first Super Bowl show that wasn't one of my favorite performers. You know, they're not all going to touch my demographic. I thought it was entertaining. I don't want to totally digress, but I will say that I did not watch it live. I chose to watch it online later, and before I could see it, it was attached to an ad that claimed that Biden had destroyed Medicaid and Trump alone can fix it, which just is a clue to me about what's out there that we do not always see. And the misinformation crusade marches on. But I enjoyed watching the halftime show, and I enjoyed even more reading a whole lot of background about it so I could understand what people are trying to say to us.
And just in time, Brandon Pope pops into the podcast.
I was just thanking you publicly, Brandon, for explaining to all of us middle-aged white folks what that halftime show was all about.
I had a lot of folks joking with me. They were like, oh, yeah, Brandon Pope explains rat beef to a bunch of white folks.
Bring it on.
But I was like, hey, I'm basically John Williams' black nephew. So, you know, I'm happy to translate.
No, and him. I don't mean to draw the color line so much because, like, my kids aren't black. They know that music. They know the words of that music. I said, Griffin, when the lyrics come up in the N-word or other inappropriate words pop up, what do y'all do? And Griff goes, it's awkward, but some of the kids just don't sing that word. And sometimes they do, but the culture has, at least in that generation, evolved to a point where those kids can sing that song and nobody takes offense. You know, what the song is about kind of was offensive to me, but the world seems to have even moved past that.
You know, I was reading stuff on my computer, but it was on because my husband's, of course, a giant sports fan, and I was looking up for the commercials and such. It's a pleasant surprise if the halftime show is terrific. I want to say the last one I remember thinking was wonderful was Beyonce. In my opinion, I think Prince did the best
Super
Bowl halftime show of all time.
Yeah. I will fight anybody on that. I'll fight on that one.
Yeah, okay? You won't fight us. That's...
I mean, I'm not a rap fan. I don't apologize for that. I'm not a fan of all kinds of things. I'm just not a rap fan. My kids are, sure. Like yours, John. They know all of them. You know, you can't help but know, though, just because it's like floating around in the air, stuff about Taylor Swift also, things about rap artists. So I knew about the feud and all that. But that's not enough to make me care enough to go looking for the Easter eggs, just like I don't care enough to go see the Taylor Swift movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, that's fine. But I mean, rap, you know, I believe is the number one best-selling music genre. It's no big surprise to me. They figured out that that is the genre that is getting them the most eyes and the most advertising dollars for a Super Bowl halftime show.
Sure, Drake has had more hits than Taylor Swift, and that wasn't even Drake up there. That was making fun of Drake.
I thought it was incredible. I think compared to others, I mean, I don't have a ranking for it yet. I still think Prince, I think Prince was the best of all time. I think Michael Jackson, can't forget his legendary performance. I think Beyonce's with Bruno. But this is up there for me, and I think partially it's because you rarely get rappers doing this, and rap performance, technically nowadays, is just not good. I mean, modern rap performance, a lot of lip syncing, a lot less actual rapping happening with modern rappers. But Kendrick Lamar, his breath control, his attention to detail, the production, like, I thought it was a really strong performance with strong messages that were timely. So overall, 10 out of 10. I loved it. And I had a great crowd for the Super Bowl party, and everybody was loud and hype. So I think 10 out of 10 over here. Also, yeah. Most watched halftime show ever.
You know, they don't get Pulitzer Prizes for nothing. So,
and it's kind of amazing it was the most watched show ever, because the game was not very interesting at that point. It was, I think it was a shutout at halftime. It was the Eagles were just clobbering them.
I didn't think any of the ads were all that great either. I mean, they're okay. You know, they were like, oh, that's nice. You know, the sloths, though, they were pretty good. But, you know, nothing that I feel like I have to go back to YouTube and see that one again.
Yeah, right. That was our score, too. Moments ago, a federal jury convicted former Illinois House Speaker Mike Madigan on 10 charges, bribery, conspiracy. They were deadlocked on several other charges. I'm just reading from Jason Meisner, Megan Crapoe, and Ray Long's piece in the Tribune. Madigan was ultimately found guilty on 10 counts, including the ComEd-related bribery conspiracy charge, which alleged a multi-pronged effort to help ComEd pass key legislation in exchange for hiring Madigan Associates as do-nothing consultants. Really, this guy could spend the rest of his life in jail. What a stupid way to go to jail. He was also convicted of 3 bribery and travel act counts related to funneling payments to those associates. He was found not guilty on almost as many counts as he was found guilty.
It was an interesting split verdict, wasn't it? That there wasn't the jury did not thunderously come down on either side, but that doesn't really help Madigan if you're convicted on 10 counts. I think the maximum sentence is somewhere around 20 years here.
All combined, it's over 100.
It is. I guess that's right. They could make them consecutive. They won't. I mean, he's probably looking at less than 10 years in prison. But that, you know, he's at a stage in his life where that's pretty close to a life sentence. The thing that always strikes me about these convictions is that we keep convicting high profile politicians, and other politicians keep doing corrupt things. And I'm thinking of how, while George Ryan was on trial for corruption, Rod Blagojevich was doing his dirty deeds that are now expunged, I guess. And then while Blagojevich is on trial, you've got Madigan and his people doing, Blagojevich was in prison. You've got Madigan pulling these tricks still. So these convictions don't seem to matter to politicians. But what they might do here, and this is what I'm hoping, is that this will finally inspire the General Assembly to get tougher on ethics rules. That Illinois has fairly loose ethics guidelines, and the Democrats always seem to like, maybe we should not be so tough on them. Maybe we should ease off on those things, and maybe now some public outcry will inspire them. But I'm not hopeful. It's like these things feel like, well, yeah, okay, another pelt on the wall at the Dirksen Federal Building, but is it going to make any difference?
Look at Pritzker. He campaigned in part originally on wanting strong ethics laws,
But in fact, the 2021 law that he, you know, signed was pretty pathetic, pretty feeble. The Illinois Inspector General resigned just like a few weeks after they passed it because it was so pathetic that she said that, you know, my office means nothing. She can't issue a subpoena without going to a little committee of legislators. She can't start an investigation of her own without having a formal complaint. Even if she reads in the newspaper about some alleged crime, she has to wait. I mean, the legislators can't literally quit one day and go back and lobby their friends the next day. But all they have to do is wait for the legislation session to end. And then it's their turn. Resign the last day. And then the next day, you're good to go at the next session. So it's ridiculous. And Pritzker has done nothing since 2021 to bring it up again and make it stronger. And when I look at the comments from people, you know, since the decision came down earlier today, Harmon, the Senate leader, Democrat, said, oh, you know, this does show that corruption is bad, basically, but we've really worked hard to get public trust back by having a balanced budget and improving our credit rating. I think what would get trust back is if you right now committed to passing better ethics ordinances, which you could have already, but he didn't do that.
To Eric's point, I think every crook, especially white-collar crooks, think they're smarter than the ones that got caught. And if you don't have the regulations, as Kate is saying, then that arrogance and that power will, I mean, it's fed by the power that they have. No one was more powerful in the state than Madigan. He was sure he was smart enough not to get caught. So unless you set the rules, they're not going to set them for themselves, whether that's Chicago or the state or nationally, as we're seeing. Even when you set the rules nationally, they're not going to necessarily follow them, which is another issue. But also, John, I think you said at the beginning that he was found not guilty on as many charges as he was found guilty. Actually, I think they called themselves a hung jury. They found no on all the racketeering charges, that is the charges that pointed out whether that tried to get at whether it was a criminal enterprise, which has to do with the organized way that he may have carried it out as opposed to just exercising his own power, I guess. Those they made no decision on. They could not find him guilty, but they didn't find him not guilty either. They just set him aside. I believe that at least is the understanding from what I've read.
Yeah, well, to me, you're either guilty or you're not. I mean, you're either going to go to jail for that or you're not. And he was not found guilty of those charges, right? The racketeering right. ones, yeah. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't
unanimous. They decide to try him again on the deadlock charges. They haven't said that they're going to, but they can if they want to.
The attorney we talked about, too, about this on the radio today, said the judge may consider his age. He is 82 years old. Would you say an 82-year-old should... that his age should mitigate the sentence that he gets?
That's always a tough one. what he's charged with here, it's pretty egregious. I figure they're going to factor in the age, and he's probably not going to serve much time at all, if any time. Should that be the case? That's a tough one. 82. But also you do the crime, you do the time. That's a tough one. I don't know where I fall on that one, but I think they're likely to ease up on actual jail time.
I'm going to give you a line, 7 years. You over or under? You're under. You're under. Way under.
Under. Yeah, I think he gets two, if that.
It was the Burke sentence.
I'll second that. I think it's going to be just a couple of years. Cause that's what Alderman Burke got, right? He got
two
years or less than that?
Two.
And I don't know if that was – he's about similar vintage, isn't he?
He's younger, but he's not. But he, yeah, he's nor. What? I'll let Peter look it up for me. How old is Ed Burke? But 80. Wow, 81. Shut my mouth. Holy cow!
Similar vintage.
that would qualify as similar vintage. I saw him at a restaurant just before his sentencing, just before he actually had to go to jail. We were sitting there, and they said, "Look over there. There's Ed Burke." He was upright, taking fluids, having a real nice dinner with folks. Looked like he was in good shape. It bothers me that the fact that you're 81 or 82 years old just means that you've been able to get away with it for a very long time. They didn't just commit the crime. They've been doing this stuff for decades.
That's why I think that the policy really should be, and I know it's easy for me to say, I'm not a judge. I wouldn't have to sit there and look at him and his family and make such a pronouncement. But I think in the case of public officials, if nothing else, public officials, they really need to crack down. They should get the sentence that the crime deserves. And I think that kind of crime, which is against the entire public trust, against all of us, should get the most serious possible.
Right. It should actually work against you because of who you are.
And that was, and that was how long
you got away with it.
Yeah, and that was the justification for that extremely long sentence for Blagojevich, which was that he betrayed the public trust, and it's a serious crime when the governor of Illinois does something like that. The idea that nobody got killed or anything like that, it doesn't correctly reflect the magnitude of an offense like that against the public. And also the fact that Blagojevich was completely and remains completely unrepentant.
Mm-hmm. That's because he didn't do anything wrong. I'm going to read Leonard Cohen's. I should read Leonard Cohen, but I'm going to read Leonard Goodman, his attorney's, from his op-ed in the Chicago Tribune. President Donald Trump's decision to pardon former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich helps correct an injustice and is a proper use of the president's pardon power. Blagojevich was a rare Illinois politician who never took a bribe, gift, or loan from any supporter, and he never took a penny from his campaign fund. His main achievements as governor, the All Kids Health Insurance Program and free rides to senior citizens on public transportation benefited ordinary Illinoisans rather than special interests. He was accused of trying to sell Obama's Senate seat. However, Blagojevich never attempted to sell the Senate seat. Rather, he attempted to make a political deal that, as the appellate court later said, was perfectly lawful and commonplace. And paragraph by paragraph, he goes through sort of dissecting the case, saying that the evidence that should have been admitted on Blago's behalf would have exonerated him, and what they got him on was stuff that today would be considered everyday politics. I asked Austin Berg about that on the radio today as well. Austin was our guest. We commented on a number of things. I believe it was Austin, Pete, who said that the reason that this other evidence wasn't admitted in court was because the state didn't want to have it heard in court. They're still investigating other people based on the strength of these calls and the investigation.
I notice he did not mention how Blagojevich was holding up money for a children's hospital in order to get a campaign donation.
Mm-hmm. He never accepted a dime.
There was a long, but he tried to extort them for it. I mean, it's like a bank robber who doesn't get the money and runs out of the bank. The idea that Blagojevich was set up, that Trump has floated, that he was set up by bad people. It's just completely wrong, and this guy is corrupt and sleazy to his core, and birds of a feather with Donald Trump giving him a pardon. Although the cynic in me suggests that maybe Trump will pardon Madigan now, because Madigan is not a conventional Democrat, and maybe Madigan will say something nice. If Madigan's smart, he'll come out and say, "Boy, I certainly hope that great man Donald Trump has his eye on
working
how
for
I was,
Eric Adams." Yeah,
how I was the victim of a weaponized. I wouldn't put it past him, because it would stick a finger in the eye of Illinois Democrats who are happy to be shed of Madigan. I did notice that Illinois Republicans were getting up on their hind legs about the Blagojevich pardon, that they were criticizing Trump for that. But I'm sure that they will quiet down quickly, because they don't want to make the great man mad. But I thought it was okay when Trump commuted his sentence 5 years ago. We got Blagojevich. He served like 8 years in prison, which I guess was enough. You know, a lot of people were saying, "Oh, it's so long." So they commuted his sentence. That was fine. But pardoning him, basically saying, "Oh, none of this ever happened," which is essentially what a pardon does. It's like, "Oh, no crime, nothing happened here." All the two trials, and all the evidence against him. And I hope if you have Goodman on, you ought to have Jeff Cohen and the guys who wrote that book about Blagojevich from the Tribune on, because and they could explain to you point by point why Goodman's piece was tendentious nonsense.
Oh, good phrase. Tendentious nonsense. I'm going to use that.
You know, the book that I've been carrying around this week is Pay to Play by the late Elizabeth Brackett, which was a really good book and detailed description of how Blago ran his office and ran his life. And it's not sympathetic to the former governor, that's for sure. Although I think a lot of us feel like, you know what, Serbia, if you want them, enjoy. My friend Steve Bertrand, who used to sit in on this panel, said he didn't go to Springfield. He's not going to go to Serbia. So that is that's a hell of a commute, isn't it?
I was at a luncheon with a group of friends the other day or a couple weeks ago, and Blagojevich walks in, and a friend who loves to capture everything for social media, but, oh, look, come on over. And she calls him over. She takes a little video and says, hi. Didn't know you'd be here. And he said, yeah. And in fact, glad you're all here. You should come see my show. And she says into the microphone, which he doesn't, well, I'm pretty sure we won't, but you can plug it if you want.
What's
and
the show?
And he goes on. His Elvis show. He performs as Elvis.
Still?
He's doing Elvis show still?
Now?
Was about a month ago.
Well, wow. I wonder how he's making money. He does cameo videos, and he gets a few a few hundred bucks for those. I'm not sure if he's still getting a lot of offers, but he's on that platform.
Well, I know how you feel about cameo, John. You haven't complained about that for a while.
No, it's been weeks.
Well, I agree with what Eric said. I think commuting his sentence was fine. He'd served, it was a pretty stiff sentence, 14 years. It was more likely, than necessary to prove the point. But wiping it off the books, I just don't see it. And this, this is not unrelated to the question about Madigan and Time Burke because they're old. Why would public officials get any special consideration of this sort, either from the courts or from a president? They commit crimes. And in fact, if you want to look at in unfair sentences, look at the fact that people of color consistently get harsher sentences than white people for the same crime. They talked about Harvey Weinstein being too old. Maybe they should go easy on him because for decades he raped women. You finally get caught. You're high profile. It doesn't make any difference. We should treat you like any other common criminal.
Even if the system isn't perfect, maybe technically, it's not like, did you rob a bank? Yes or no. It's kind of a gray area. Is that politics? Is that campaign fundraising? And it's a little squishy. Or in fact, is it breaking the law? And a jury had to decide. They did their best and they said, yes, you are guilty. And so that's justice in America. And it's better here than almost any place. And from Donald Trump all the way down through Illinois and Chicago, it just seems like, no, justice is whatever we decided is now. And we don't have to abide by it or believe in it. We can change the rules. My recollection is it did happen and he should have gone to jail. Hey, here's a quick note from our sponsor. If you're feeling a little cabin feverish, take a little winter road trip to Ottawa, Illinois. The fun, friendly, charming destination with boutique stores, small town coffee shops, award-winning locally brewed beer. I promise you that. And all kinds of excellent casual and fine dining. Settle down and snuggle up in one of Ottawa's nearly 400 rooms. Hotels, private rentals, cottages, B&Bs. Start making memories in Ottawa. It's the middle of everywhere. Log on to visitottawail.com. Brought to you by Ottawa, the middle of everywhere, and the Illinois Office of Tourism. And now back to the Mincing Rascals. Last March, Chicago police pulled over a white SUV being driven by Dexter Reed, a black man. Why he was pulled over is not clear. Maybe they saw that he wasn't wearing a seatbelt or his window tint was too dark. Police approached the driver's door anyway, and they asked him to roll down his window and unlock his door. Dexter did not cooperate. He was also not told why he was being pulled over. Anyway, things deteriorated quickly. COPA says that Reed fired first at the police from inside his vehicle. The video seems to support that. In a span of 41 seconds then, four officers fired 96 shots back. One officer was shot and survived with a minor injury. Reed was hit 13 times and was killed. The city was poised this week to pay Reed's family $1.25 million. They were going to settle the case. The city council stalled at the last minute on that.
Well, I would say that $1.25 million is fairly cheap as far as these things go, and that the settlement they could be exposed to could run in the tens of millions. On the other hand, I think there are a lot of questions about this case that I would like to see answered that have not been answered yet. It's been almost a year. We still are not clear as to why they pulled Dexter Reed over, and I would like to know about that. And I also think that if, in fact, Reed fired first, that giving his family compensation for that is offends my sense of propriety. So I would like to see it go to trial and see if we could find out more about it. Yeah, it might cost the taxpayers a little bit extra if they lose. But I, at some point, I think you have to say we need to conduct a thorough, fair, neutral inquiry into some of these things rather than just try to settle them and make them go away.
If you believe COPA, he did fire at them. And the reason that he was pulled over, I mean, you've got two things here. Why did they pull that guy over? Maybe they should not have. And then five people jump out with guns pointed at him because, what, he didn't have his seatbelt on? And we don't even know if that was the reason. That's hard to believe. And the tinted windows, maybe, I don't know. Does a SWAT team of Chicago police officers normally pull somebody over like that and jump out with their guns drawn for tinted windows? That doesn't seem to make sense. I've looked into this lately, and I don't even recall in the past an explanation for why he was pulled over. So that's one thing. But if you fire at the police from inside a vehicle, game over.
You know, I mean, we don't know what he knew. It was not clear. It all happened pretty fast, although they apparently were tailing him. Again, we don't know why, and made a quick maneuver to get behind him and jump out of their cars. I don't think they were identified as police. Clearly, we know they were, but we don't know if he did. We don't know if he saw them approach or if suddenly there's someone banging on his window.
They were plainclothes police officers, but
they were.
I'm trying to remember now. I'm playing back the video in my head. Did they say police? They said roll down the window.
They did not identify.
I'll bet he knew. Let me just guess. I'll bet he knew those were the police.
Women and men. It was a mixed group. They just didn't look to me like somebody that he would mistake as, for instance, if he was in a gang, which I don't even know that he was. I don't think I've heard that he was. They didn't really look like a group of people you would expect to be an opposing gang.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, this kind of just brings out the whole problem here. There hasn't even been a finished investigation. We don't even know what both sides are alleging happened yet. To be giving a settlement, even relatively small, let's put that in quotation marks, at $1.25 million, because often these types of settlements would be, yes, absolutely more. So you're totally right about that, Eric. But even a relatively small $1.25 million is a lot to most of us. And it definitely does not put in place a good incentive pattern to people looking at what they can get out of the city, that you can get a settlement when you're the one who shot first at the police, just because the city would like to settle for as little as they can. At some point, the city does need to take a principled stand. And this being a high profile case, and being a case where I have yet to hear anyone really question the fact that he did shoot first at the police, it seems like this is the case for them to take a principled stand.
I'd rather see a disincentive to police to keep shooting people on the street, particularly Black people, but anybody. I think that's the problem. It's like, well, we'll just clean it up by throwing some millions at it. The police are not properly trained or disciplined to de-escalate cases like this. Instead, they run, they gang up on the car, they freak somebody out. The guy has a gun and he shoots. Well, I agree with Eric. I'd like the facts. I don't want to see $1 million here, $1 million there to cover up what really happened.
If you remember,
I also want to hear the facts before we give the money. Aren't both things problems? Margin.
Oh, hell yeah. Wait, you're talking about the pulling
both
over.
To be done. Yeah. Yes. I mean, they've only done, as far as I know, still only 6% of the consent decree. They have not put in place a system to track problem officers and get them off the street on time before something like this happens. They have not put in place the kind of training that they should for officers who are doing pretextual stops.
One state lawmaker has just introduced a bill to do that.
We should point out are not illegal. So we should absolutely have a big public discussion about how often we want them to be doing pretextual stops.
I just want to say that the city did pay try to pay off Laquan McDonald's family before all that information came out. They gave him like somewhere around $5 million. And I think they were everyone was kind of hoping it would go away. This is not the fact that a settlement is being offered before we know the facts is not completely unusual.
Well, you remember Sonia Massey, that woman in Springfield that got shot, the lady with the boiling pot of water? She would have been 37 today, and Sangamon County paid $10 million to her family.
WTTW reported that part of this deal that ended up not going through city council would have had a stipulation that would ban police officers from having that quota of traffic stops, which I think is part of the problem. I think quotas for police, you got to pull over so many people this month or whatever. I think that adds to the issue, because why are you racking up numbers trying to do that? Why are you checking marks and stuff like that? I'm curious if there's a way they can just separate and unbundle that from the settlement itself, because we don't have all the facts from the settlement, as you guys are stating here. But this issue on police stops, how frequent they have, the quotas, it's a constant issue, and one that really isn't just an issue in Chicago, but overall with the police system in America. So I want to see that explored. I'm disappointed that the deal fell through because of that, really, if that stipulation was really a part of it. Because I think many could agree, this quota thing, it's not productive.
Wait a minute, you're disappointed the deal fell through?
No, the two things should not be together. I mean, that's a gigantic issue. Why would that be part of this? The department simply needs to actually get its act together on figuring out their rules and regulations on this.
Yeah.
But Brandon, you're not saying that the city should pay the Reed family $1.25 million, are you?
No, I'm not saying that necessarily has to happen, but I do think that the issue on traffic stops does need to be addressed. Absolutely. The money, the payout, as Eric mentioned, it is relatively small compared to the rest, but it's hard for me to say whether that payout is something that should happen, because I think the details are still so murky on exactly what happened with that traffic stop. It's hard to make a determinative yes or no, this was right or wrong. But what we can agree on, I think at least, is that the traffic stop system and this idea of quotas, and you got to get so many in a month, got to pull over so many people in this time period, I think that leads to what we see happen, these unnecessary interactions, and leads to escalated conflicts and sadly death.
The whole operation, I watched most of the videos today and yesterday, and Eric, you've looked at them all, right? You went all Zapruder on this story, right?
I did for a while, yeah. I was looking at all the surveillance video, and one of my strong takeaways was there was no way in the world that those police officers saw him without a seatbelt, given where their car was and where his car was. There was some other reason they pulled him over, but it was certainly not the seatbelt, because they were like two blocks behind him. Absolutely no way.
And it's strange credulity to think that they would then go after him with that much firepower for that reason. So I'm just bothered by the dishonesty of that. Whatever the reason, say it's the tinted windows. I'm not exactly sure why ostensibly they pulled him over, but just give us your best shot. Tell us the truth. Tell us why you pulled him over. When you listen to the audio of the officers as it was happening in the aftermath, you do hear some of them saying to some of the officers that were firing their guns, don't say anything, don't say anything. Like right now, you're being recorded with your body camera. Don't say anything that might incriminate you. Now, maybe that's just good legal advice from anybody in a high-profile critical situation. But it also sounds like we know we screwed up. Let's not let the truth of the matter slip out. Those videos are awful. I mean, and I say that from the police's perspective, too. The window goes down just a little bit, and then it goes back up. And then they keep yelling at him to open the door, open the door, open the door. Then you hear these kind of muffled shots, boom, boom, boom. And maybe those were from the inside coming out. One of the officers was struck by a bullet. And then there was just a barrage of bullets. And the officers are freaking out. They're being fired at from inside a vehicle into which they can't see. One of them has already been shot, and it's a panic. The officers run in the opposite direction, then run back at the vehicle and just continue to unload. 96 shots on this guy. Dexter Reed was eventually dead on the ground behind the vehicle. They shot him that much. He was able to evidently get out of the vehicle and was continually hit. When his body was then, I don't know why I'm telling you all these details. Pardon me, I'll finish the story. But then his body is lying underneath the back of the van, and they're afraid to approach him still. You know, they say he's still breathing. And then they were yelling instructions at the corpse lying on the ground. Eventually, they handcuffed him dead on the street. So you can see why $1.25 million to some people would say, okay, you guys screwed up that much. The city should pay. But Dexter Reed fired first. The police have to defend themselves.
Dexter Reed rolled up a tinted window that you could not see through, having been told to unroll it or to open the door. And then he fired first. So that's why I just think it would be a really bad idea for the city to be settling before we find out anything else from the investigation that would exculpate him.
And then think about the case in Springfield. So Sonia Massey, Sangamon County would rather give $10 million than see this thing through. Of course, let's compare those cases for just a minute.
He was so guilty.
I know.
Even his partner there tried to.
I mean, yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, yeah. Stand up. I don't see that payout incentivizing, anybody in Sangamon County to do anything else to the police there. Anyone who saw those videos, I think immediately.
She was not a threat to them. She was not a deadly threat to them, that's for sure.
Yeah. But when did this whole discussion or vehicle cease to be a tool to compensate families for loved ones that were unfairly killed by police and turn into a way to just hush up the whole story? That is not the purpose of compensating a family. I don't want to see our tax dollars be used as a way to silence the facts when police seem to have made some grievous mistakes in both of those cases. Whether now Dexter Reed may have made the first mistake, but I want to hear the whole thing played out, and certainly with the Massey murder, I don't think that that's a way to let anybody off the hook. We deserve to know exactly what happened to the extent it can be determined.
But if Dexter Reed's family doesn't accept the payment, it goes to trial, they may get nothing too, right?
I mean, I'm struck by how small that settlement is, given we're talking tens of millions of dollars in some of these wrongful conviction cases.
Yeah, but the police are on the right to fire on Dexter Reed.
I know. I mean, I think that's why I say I think that the offer, the $1.25 million, is tellingly low.
Maybe that's based on the nature of the stop. I wonder if you could say that the police instigated the shooting because of their aggressive and unwarranted tactics, right? So, yeah, the guy fired on them first, but the police were so wrong in the beginning of this story that who knows? Maybe it's going to cost the city more than 1.25, huh?
They were a SWAT team worried about seatbelts and tinted windows. I think we need to know more about that.
Our governor signed a law ordering the confiscation of guns in cases of orders of protection. And he trolled President Trump, or tried to, by making a satirical announcement last week that Lake Michigan would now be called Lake Illinois. I don't know if you guys saw the video. I didn't think it was particularly funny, maybe because JB isn't particularly comic. One Republican congressman has now petitioned the Congress to change the name of Greenland to Red, White, and Blue Land. I'm not making that up. And all of this kind of nonsense to me just lowers my faith in the people who are regulating our lives. This sort of discourse is so stupid. Similarly or not, the DuPage County Courthouse has had Henry Hyde's name stripped from the building. And that strikes me as kind of tit for tat. Like, oh, let's play that game too. We don't like Henry Hyde because of the Hyde Amendment, which restricted abortions. So let's take the name off the side of the building. There has been no pressing call for that to happen, but everybody just seems to be getting in the game.
Well, Henry Hyde's legacy was to harm a lot of women in underserved, low-income communities. So I would not have honored that in the first place. And, isn't this sort of the flip side of the same coin that we started with? Does Madigan get some special dispensation because he's old and got away with what he did for so long? Do public servants, elected officials, deserve to have buildings named after them because they were elected officials doing their job? And in his case, doing it in a way that hurt a lot of people that he could have been helping. I'm not sure naming these buildings after public officials is the right way to go. You get an airport, you get a federal building, you get, oddly, renaming Fort Bragg after a private first class who commandeered an enemy's ambulance during World War II to save a fellow soldier. Naming it after him, that's a great story.
Really? You like that? So that's, well, Pete Hegseth saying that Fort Bragg, the Civil War enslaver, we're going to take that off. It's called Fort Liberty. He says, no, we're going to call it Fort Bragg, but it'll be a different Fort Bragg now. It'll be a different Bragg.
It's not Braxton Bragg, the incompetent Confederate general.
I think right. that's
a little too clever by half, I would say, in that example. But my point is, that you pick people who are deserving. Why automatically do federal buildings and airports get named after federal officials who were working for us and doing a job being public servant, when there are many other people who could be honored out there and I could argue could be just as, if not more, deserving?
Yeah, right. Well, when you think of Henry Hyde, what comes to mind? Hyde Amendment, maybe. What else comes to mind? Henry Hyde. We're playing word association.
That's all I got. I'm angry enough about that.
I was a young man. It was a youthful indiscretion.
That's the one I'm thinking of. That's what I'm thinking of.
And he's, oh, my God.
42 years old, has an affair with a married 29-year-old staffer.
And mother of three.
Mother of three, ruined her marriage and saved his, but he called it a youthful indiscretion.
While he was heading up the impeachment team against Bill Clinton.
How good is that?
Huh? Well, Monica.
And what comes to my mind is controversial membership on a failed savings and loan, where he let a savings
yes.
and loan
yeah,
fall apart. And so there is a problem when we reflexively name buildings for public officials. I was going to suggest maybe that the old postage stamp rule, where you got to wait 5 years after somebody dies to name a building after them, so that no sentiment or less sentiment is involved in it. It's kind of the Hall of Fame rule, like naming the hospital after John Stroger or the Thompson yes. Center. The Thompson Center was named after Jim Thompson well before he died, and I just think
and so was Stroger Hospital.
So, had he not died yet?
No.
Oh, I thought he had. It was
I
right
thought he had too.
But mm-hmm. in any case, it was not. It was fairly quickly afterwards. I mean, they renamed the Kennedy Expressway for John F. Kennedy like the day after he was assassinated. I think that you need to wait and let history make its judgment before you name buildings after people. I don't really like this naming and renaming stuff, but on the other hand, I think they took the name of Denny Hastert off some things, maybe a wrestling tournament, and I'm not sure what else, after he was implicated in
that's different.
That is a little different. So I mean, I don't know what the rules ought to be, but I think we have to be careful.
How about not naming things after humans?
Good rule.
There are good humans. I don't think we should throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Boy, you
we
never
just
know.
We have to be more thoughtful about it.
Some crap surfaces.
I like the five-year rule. Five-year rule sounds good. I might even make it 10 years if it was up to me before you go naming it after public officials. You know, that said, and Henry Hyde really did make my skin crawl for many reasons, and certainly his association with the Hyde Amendment is prime among those. But I actually agree, I think, with John. I think you were against the renaming of the courthouse. It's there. It's done. The fact is, many people are pro-life. The majority of people are not, but are pro-choice. But plenty of people are pro-life. It's even though I am pro-choice, I don't think that that is a worthy reason for taking his name off of something. Denny Hastert, on the other hand, turned out to be a pedophile. And that's
So the Hastert wrestling tournament, that's easy enough. But if I were walking in and out of the DuPage County Courthouse and I saw Henry Hyde's name there, I don't know that that would have given me pause or made me feel disenfranchised or disrespected, which was some of the things they said were happening to women that would go in and out of that courthouse, knowing that abortion is the law of the Illinois land, and yet this guy was against it. That doesn't make him a terrible person. It makes him on the wrong side of a political issue at a particular point in time. The other thing that has been named or renamed recently is the Gulf of Mexico. A friend of mine, Lou Manfredini, who works with us at WGN Radio, sent me a screen grab of his Google Maps. For some reason, he was traveling, and there was the Gulf, that body of water off of Florida, and it said, it did not say Gulf of Mexico anymore. At a press gathering this week with Elon Musk and his son X, a reporter from the Associated Press was not allowed in because the Associated Press had not begun using Gulf of America. They still call it the Gulf of Mexico. Their reporter was banned from a press gathering as a result.
A lot of it just harkens back to this idea that Trump has been very clear about. He invoked manifest destiny in his inauguration speech, which is a term people probably haven't heard since high school. But it's this idea that America has the right to expansion into other places. And some of these come off as funny, you know, talking about Canada as the 51st state, talking about acquiring Greenland, the Panama Canal, all of it, the Gulf of Mexico and America. But what it really inherently is about is Trump believing that America can just revert back to its old days of imperialism and colonialization and just take things because, hey, we're America, red, white, and blue. Ah.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. It's America. Why would they complain? They would love it.
Welcome, wants us with open arms to just, like, take them on as an American place.
They've accepted renaming Mount Denali as Mount McKinley because that is on American soil. The Gulf of Mexico, we don't own the Gulf of Mexico. Our president doesn't have a right to rename it. But I thought they were rather generous in their policy of stating that, you know, it's called one thing in the United States and another thing in the rest of the world, which happens to have the added value of being true. So it's not like they ignored him, but they had a principled stand as, you know, the eighth style book is the guidelines we've all used as journalists for years, and we expect them to have a rational decision. And I think they did.
I think that's a serious First Amendment issue. So I really hope the AP is going to push that as much as they can.
Do we know?
Back to Pritzker, though.
What's that?
It's back to Pritzker's little video, which is how you got us into this whole discussion. He did a better job with his delivery than he did with his billionaires joke at the DNC, I thought. So that
fall flat.
That was really flat. This they did, a much better production of. So it was kind of cute, kind of amusing. But when I thought about it for a little bit, I was like, why would you do that? You're doing that because you being Pritzker, want to put yourself out there as one of the lead people resisting Trump. Why are you doing that? Because you're setting yourself up for a presidential run. So you're doing that for yourself, because I actually, the more I think about it, I don't see how that benefits Illinois.
Yeah.
He
doesn't even do Illinois media
Trump
much.
Over legitimate things that defend the citizens of Illinois and our laws. But that is just this silly extra way to get under Trump's skin in a way that can only come back and bite us all in the ass.
It just right. It doesn't help us. And, you know, so when I Googled it, I Googled the J.B. Pritzker video. I wanted to look at it again. I think this is telling, Kate. One of the four little boxes that came up, like click here to see the story, was a Philadelphia TV station. So that's exactly what J.B. wants.
Yes.
National exposure for somebody pushing back at the president, which doesn't serve Illinois necessarily, but it serves his profile.
And yes. And that is a really bad idea to be poking Donald Trump that way, because do we all remember a lot of people think one of the things that got him to run for president was because he was so mad about the great jokes that Barack Obama made about him at the White House Correspondents' Dinner in 2011 or 2012, 2011, I guess, whatever. He was just absolutely furious about it. Obama was great. His delivery was amazing. I actually went back and rewatched it. I was just on the floor. He was like, oh, Mr. Trump, we all know the breadth of your experience. And people are just, people were just going nuts. He was like, there was that incident last week on your show at that steakhouse. Apparently, the Omaha steak judges weren't happy with the way the contestants had made the stakes, but you figured out who to fire and you figured out not to fire this person or that person. You fired Gary Busey, and you know, hats off to you, because that's the kind of decision that would have had me up all night.
And that launched a thousand ships.
More than that, I would like to say, and I've said this many times, I'm sure, on the show and elsewhere, the more time we spend laughing at Trump, the more we're missing the actual harm that he is causing to this country. I don't think making fun of him is doing us any good. We need to be
focused on
what he's doing that is illegal and harmful. And you can mock him all you want, but it doesn't get us anywhere.
Well, I want to skip then to this. Go ahead, Brandon.
Well, a quick counterpoint. I hear you, because I agree generally. But I really do think in these times where people don't read, literally, and don't pay attention to news at all, sometimes the best way to get a message across of how silly or ridiculous some of these ideas that Trump has are is to lean into that. And I think that's kind of what Pritzker was doing. So maybe something like that showcases to someone who isn't as informed. Yeah, it actually does sound kind of dumb that Illinois would take over Green Bay. Like, and then you apply that to what's happening here, maybe that has somebody wake up and say, that is a little unproductive, right? That's my only counterpoint, is maybe that humor helps some people, because I'm seeing less and less people actually paying attention to
the news. And, you know, actually, I think what Jimmy Kimmel and the late night comics do is good, is important. It's contextual. I don't know that, and
that's where the humor belongs, though. I don't think Pritzker making funny videos really is the way to go.
Brian Stelter's tweet just now, producer Pete handed me this breaking. For the second day in a row, that Associated Press reporter on pool duty who tried to attend the President of the United States event was blocked from entering the Oval Office. The reporter was there to cover the swearing-in ceremony for Tulsi Gabbard. CNN's Caitlin Collins, which White House official made the decision? This is a question from CNN's Caitlin Collins. Which White House official made the decision to bar the AP reporter? Press Secretary Carolyn Leavitt said, it is a privilege to cover this White House. Caitlin says, is this retaliatory? Leavitt said, it is a fact that the body of water off the coast of Louisiana is called the Gulf of America. I was very upfront in my briefing on day one that if we feel there are lies being pushed by outlets in this room, we are going to hold those lies accountable. And it is a fact that the body of water off the coast of Louisiana is called the Gulf of America. That from the mouthpiece of the president, which is the equivalent to me of that was the biggest crowd in the history of presidential elections.
Wouldn't it be great if CNN, ABC, NBC,
I wish CBS, they would,
MSNBC marched out of the room in solidarity with the AP?
They didn't do it last time.
Get, You can get coverage for your signing ceremonies and your swearing in ceremonies from somewhere else, and you know, we'll report the news, but we're not going to give you the video that you want until you respect the AP's decision. And maybe they should all go with that decision. That there's got to be an I Am Spartacus moment here for the media in Washington, because if they let one outlet get pushed around, they're all going to get pushed around for 4 years. And it's something where, how important is it to be in the room when Tulsi Gabbard is being sworn in? I don't think very important. And if Trump loves the media, he loves getting coverage. So I would say, nuts to you, man. We're not going to cover you until you realize that we have the freedom to call it the Gulf of whatever we want to call it.
And the hypocrisy, they're replacing the standard press in the Defense Department, for example. They've kicked out all of the usual press that has covered for decades, and replacing them with people who do nothing but lie on Trump's behalf. If really what you want is press that tells the truth, we could give you some tips on who to knock out of the press room, and it wouldn't necessarily be CNN and NBC.
Well, and that wasn't Elon Musk up there, but in an era where we're just not going to edit anymore, we're just going to let people say anything they want on social media platforms or from the White House press corps room, then what do you care what AP is calling that body of water off the coast of Florida and Louisiana? How does that disqualify you from covering the news? But that's the hill that they've decided they're going to die on, and wow. Any last comments from anybody, Brandon?
Marge? I think wow is where I would end.
Yeah, or oh no.
We have forever disposed of the concept of the slow news week.
Eric, Kate, Marge, and Brandon, thanks for joining us on the panel this week. We're produced by Ben Anderson and Pete Zimmerman. I'm John Williams, and another pod comes your way next Wednesday. Okay, guys.
Thanks, everyone. That was fun.
Thank you.
Yeah. It was fun and exhausting.
And Brandon, thanks again for being my musical expert.
Anytime, buddy.
It was awesome. Fun. It was a fun conversation.
All right. See you guys.
See ya.
See ya.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNRadio.com.